No, but seriously though, you guys are both recording artists, because I don't know anything about sound, and even I know about the Sound Pixies.
I mean,
you guys heard about these guys?
I never had the Sound Pixie talks or the Bees and the Birds.
So
some of us do have to find things out the hard way.
Okay, yeah. When a pair of headphones and a recording mic love each other very much.
Outside of a bar.
Oh, shit.
Sometimes in the backseat of a car. Occasionally, the Sound Pixies can leak out of like the little gap in between the headphones and your head, and they can like mess with the mic.
When an aux cable and a cord jack get together. And they meet up with an XLR.
Yeah, well,
The XLR, that's where it gets a little weird. You start getting into like the balance connections and the TRSs. It starts turning into a movie.
Oh, you don't want that.
I mean, you're talking professionals at that point.
God damn. This has been so long since we did a premonition of paint.
Yeah, we kind of like did one episode and we talked about our history, paint and miniatures. And that, I remember specifically, there were only two of us. I do remember that there were two of us because I was one of them.
Yeah, I think I was the other one.
Right.
I'm pretty sure. I don't remember, though.
I'll have to go back and listen.
I don't think the quarter inch and the aux jack had met yet in my case. So.
No, I... you were a
Everything
twinkle
was just
on still... an indicator on a board. That's what you were.
That's small gleam in the little board's eyes.
Yeah.
You were the hum of an amplifier in the back of a smoky bar.
Well, welcome everyone to the second episode of Premonition of Paint. This is kind of like our side stories for the cutting mat, where we talk more about miniature and like hand painting and stuff. Not so much sci-fi mecha.
It's like the side stories, but it's better because it is... You are going to learn things today on side stories. Like, yeah, you learn stuff, but it's about creepypasta on here. Yeah. On here, you're going to learn stuff. And it's some of it's going to be creepypasta, but some of it's also going to be
fucking. If you guys don't know what we're talking about, last podcast on the left, and their fucking side story shit recently has been in fucking scene.
It's fantastic.
So good.
I love it.
I've never been that keyed into that stuff, but the the little bit of it that I've found has definitely been more confusing than enlightening, I think.
Isn't it just great? Isn't that fantastic?
It's like well, I'm not sure why this happened or how or what's going on.
Right. Yeah. Sometimes it just, you know.
And we have a guest with us.
Who?
The sexiest voice you've been hearing. Not you.
Oh.
The one in the middle. Phil.
I'm stuck in the middle with or without you.
Yes. With or without. Oh.
I just smashed two old, not great songs together for that one. Fellas. For those just joining us.
Now that's what I call sandwich. Music
sandwich.
That's what I call soundtrack errors, is what that is.
Hey, we introduced ourselves in the last episode. Hey, Phil, why don't you introduce yourself?
I'm Phil Build Stuff. I'm Phil. I build stuff and enjoy painting stuff quite a bit. That's my favorite part of building stuff. And if this is about miniature stuff, if any of you are really old and used to hang out on mini painting forums, I used to go by Forced Perfect. So if you've ever bumped into me anywhere, that's who you're talking to now.
You're gonna find a long last like son or something.
Yeah. I know, right?
You're forced.
Perfect.
No, dude, that's seriously like that. That's how people have actually found me through that screen name. Like, it hasn't really happened much since my current hobby incarnation or whatever. But the anyway, that's a long story. It was weird. And that's usually, how I forums, like to tell stories on a podcast.
With forums, it is. With forums, it's usually weird. Yeah.
Forums are awesome though.
Yeah, they're kind of fun.
I gotta say, I kind of miss them. I'm afraid, I'm sad they all got the plague and died. That's awful. I hate the fact that forums are now dead.
There are still a few that are going
strong.
Still
some,
They're pretty GW focused, but
no, they're gone. They're all
dead. They're dead to Brandon.
All of them. Every one of them's dead. They're all dead.
They're all dead. They're all make believe.
R.I.P.
This is imaginary.
R.I.P. in peace.
Not real life.
Anyway, like I said, so sad that they're all dead, all of them, every one of them. And And, you know, since this is a podcast about forums, I'm really glad that you're able to join us and talk about
totally.
How that world used to be, you know, back in the olden times.
Yeah, in my day, we used to have the Discords and the Instagrams. And
who walked 15 miles in the snow uphill both ways and Joel made the snow?
Pretty much
flocking behind you.
Kind of how, I mean, that's how it all worked out, you know?
Yeah.
Holy shit. Well, yeah, so this is the second episode, and we haven't done it in a while because the world's ending.
Yeah.
And ironically, we've been more busy than we have free time.
Well, thank God that priorities finally prevailed. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, right.
You're not wrong. Yep, that is what usually happens. But as a reminder, if this is your first premonition of paint episode, if this is your first premonition of paint episode, English is my first language. I'm terrible at speaking it. And on this podcast, on this sort of side podcast, Joel Trugunpla and me, Brandon Mecha Genre from the Cutting Mat Podcast, get together to talk about miniature painting and the painting world. And we focus a lot on airbrushing on the Cutting Mat Podcast. Here, you're probably going to hear more brush painting talk and talk about it is a totally different world. There is some overlap. And I think we discussed that overlap in the last episode. I highly recommend that you go back and listen to that episode. But today, we kind of want to talk about like learning, like how you get better at this stuff.
I love learning.
Yeah.
Learning is good.
I mean, it's fine. So
it's all right.
It's okay.
Underrated, I guess.
It's a thing you can do. Yeah. It passes the time.
You don't need to learn. Well,
so Phil, how long you been painting miniatures?
I think I started painting about 25 years ago, right around that. So
that's a lot of years ago.
I have been doing this a really embarrassing number of years for a man of my age.
So, sweet.
There you go.
I was five years old.
Myself out.
You were five?
For real? I was 5 years old when you started painting miniatures. That's amazing.
When you started, I was like, what the fuck?
Nope. When Phil started, I was 5 years old.
I painted my first miniature when squats were still an army. That's.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, my. Yeah.
So, old hammer cred there.
Yeah, that is some old hammer.
You could buy squats at the store. You could buy a Zote at the store, dude.
So, like, what was it like having to ride a dinosaur to work, Phil?
The important thing is that you got great mileage and they ate your enemies and you still got your paint. That's all that matters.
Yeah. Still got your paint. I mean, that's probably still back when. Would you remember when Games Workshop paint was just like coat of arms?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that is also a very interesting story. We might get to the story of like some of these different paint companies.
What's really depressing is you could do a series of podcasts on the drama, and I mean real gripping drama that surrounds the evolution of the GW paint line and all the many other paint lines that it spawned as a result of its weird dealings. But
totally accurate. That is totally accurate.
See, I'm so glad we're doing this because unlike you guys, I've only been painting minis realistically for a couple months. So this is Ben in this situation. Like,
big feelings surrounding the paint ranges, but either way.
Big feelings. That would be the worst,
most boring and yet strangely informative podcast series ever made.
So it's like Charlie Day and Always Sunny with the fucking theory graph behind them in the middle.
No, for real.
Vallejo?
It would make a lot of things make a lot of sense, and Boris would come to the fore frequently in those conversations.
I can imagine that that's kind of like just the couple of years I've been in like sci-fi plomo and shit and scale modeling, just knowing the weird drama between modern paint companies. I can't even fucking imagine in the day.
Oh, dude, when you're talking about something like that company, it's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Shit. Mm-hmm. If it's anything like they handled fucking Bolt Thrower, I'm not shocked.
That was an early example of how bad it could get, really.
I think at that time they had an idea, the direction they wanted to take the company, and it was just wrong. Like, it was blatantly the wrong idea. And a couple of different miniature companies and major game companies have had the same problem over the years. Again, these could all be separate episodes of Permission of Paint.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, for real.
Dude, we're
but specifically
we're drifting so hard.
We are super we're still talking about learning. We're talking about learning history, the history of miniature paints. But like Joel had a situation recently where let's just put this in a context then. When I say what is the most important technique for miniature painting, what do you say?
Smooth base coats.
Yeah, and I say it's licking your brushes, but there's something else that's equally important.
My second thing would have been licking your brushes. But.
Yeah, you got to lick the brush. It's very important. It tells you whether your paint's make sure your paint's done. Otherwise, it's medium rare.
It's all mixed, cooked.
But I'm talking about layering.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And layering color modulation for highlighting and shading is something that is like, I mean, if you're looking to paint a miniature and you want to really get that sense of scale. That's going to be a pretty critical technique.
Yeah.
Joel had
right
a run
after,
in.
Right after smooth base coats and licking your brushes, I would say layering is probably the most important.
Oh, thing. Yeah. Because if you don't have a smooth base coat, you can't have smooth colors. If you don't lick your brush, then you anger the painting gods. If you don't know how to layer, it's going to be tough to modulate your colors.
Yeah. Layering is like the gateway technique to learning all the really fancy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And is it fairly is. Fancy in and of itself, honestly. Like if you can layer nicely, then you're probably going to have nicer looking models than 80% of the dudes you bump into.
100%.
And after that, you can do all kinds of crazy stuff. So.
Yeah, I mean, when you describe it, it sounds simple. In theory, you put a different color of paint on top of, a color of paint. I mean, I think really the trick is like, how many layers do you do? How do you modulate your colors while you're putting the layers on? Joel, what was this thing that you discovered about layering?
Oh, man. I felt like I hit second puberty. I was just cranking my hog for like 30 minutes, man.
That's why we lick our brushes, Joel.
You're right.
That's important.
So, Joe, shout out Joe from Hangar 18. He gave me the naked dwarfs from Shadespire.
Hell yeah, naked dwarfs.
And I really wanted to paint them because I was like, well, I've got a bunch of old ass like chaos dudes that are practically naked barbarians.
Right.
And then I love orcs, so I have a fuck ton of orcs, and it's still painting majority of skin.
Right.
But I'm a very impatient painter. And that's something I'm trying to work on is I just want to get to the painting part. And I also, when I get to the painting part, I just want it to be done. But I've always kind of layered until I had to do a normal naked dwarf that's like 80% skin. And I was like, layering.
Well, that's
I'm
the tricky thing too. This actually came up when I was talking to somebody the other day about, They were doing like resin painting on a big bust or whatever, but the same thing applies is that you get there's a lot more forgiveness in fantasy and sci-fi than there is in more realistic painting styles. Cause just mm-hmm. like you were saying, who knows what a, chaos Norse berserker looks like,
Right,
who knows,
exactly.
Like orcs are,
what does an orc look like? Right.
Orcs are green and you can make them whatever color you want. And it looks wild, but your eye is going to expect a certain range of tones in lifelike flesh. So
that actually comes down to a little bit of like physiology and the way that human brains are wired. There's a couple of colors that humans are very good at differentiating between. And some of the colors are green. Mm-hmm. Humans are great at picking out different shades of green.
We do like
the
green.
Orcs.
Yeah.
Humans are also very good at picking out different shades of skin,
mm-hmm.
which causes a lot of problems in the real world.
I've noticed a little bit of that here and there. Yeah.
Yeah. It needs to be
troubleshooted for sure.
But it means that when you paint skin, layering is critical because there's a certain way that you expect skin to look.
All my guys are tan. That's another thing I'm running into is that I paint really tan dudes. Because I want to do him as like a snow dwarf. I was like, oh yeah, he's got to be like pale.
Yeah, but he's naked.
But something in my stupid brain was like, yeah, let's start off with this like burgundy red.
What?
Not necessarily bad, but
I didn't build up enough. I did the one layer of like actual good layering. And that's when I had this epiphany. And then I just wanted to get it done. because I was super tired. And instead of putting it down, I rushed it and then just like dry brushed a lighter layer of skin on top of it.
I just did it badly. Yeah,
I put snow on. I was like, okay, it's tabletop quality.
Tabletop quality there's means
naked
that if you
dwarf
hold it
in the snow.
Right, yeah. Well, he's tan because the sun reflects off the snow and tans his underside too. So he's tan all the way around.
I'll say dark orange dwarf or like tan.
I'm not a Age of Sigmar player, but like any good nerd, I, you know, absorb every bit of lore I can find like a vacuum. So according to the story, the naked dwarfs live on a magical world full of nothing but like volcanoes and fire and lava and stuff.
So that would make sense.
I was going to be like, oh, tan dwarfs, that could actually work with the burgundy. And perfect. Then you're like, and then I put him in the snow. And I was like, man, it stopped.
Well, you know, every now and then they get lost. Some dwarf went out to get milk and never came back. And this turned out
through a realm gate. And now he's,
That's what I was trying to do.
Guys, why is it so cold?
This is bad.
Where's the volcanoes?
He just needs to go slayer, grow a bigger beard. He'll be all right.
But it was weird though, because
the beard's so large he can wrap himself in it.
Totally.
The moment that I like did, it was like his biceps or something. And I did like three passes of just layers of the single color, not multiple colors, single color on top of the base. I was like, oh fuck, this is what layers are supposed to look like.
Oh, the epiphany.
The epiphany is critical.
Yeah.
That's why you do it badly.
Brandon.
What? Yeah. I think I
messaged you like right me, like, fuck.
What have I done?
I broke
something. Something terrible has happened. I've grown as a painter. This is awful.
Yeah. It was weird. Like, it's really weird. Because I haven't had anything like that in a while. I haven't had like an aha moment of like painting. I've just been, you know, doing what I normally do, but like this has like changed the way I look at everything.
But I think it's also because this was like, you sort of described this as an opportunity to just sort of dick around. Like you're just messing around, trying new stuff out. You know, you basically, since Joe gave you those dwarves, maybe you didn't have like a psychological investment in them as much as if you'd spent Games Workshop miniature money on them.
Right.
Well, the other thing too is I don't play, so I don't care what it looks like. I'm going to paint them all differently, like different color schemes and shit. Like,
as much
I want to do like dioramas and shit, but you know, that's
as much as I love if there's one thing to love about GW, it's the insane backstory work that they put into all their stuff.
They
really do. Like, I haven't played one of those games in like 15 years, but I still like keep up on the evolution of their like universe lore building or whatever.
It's as informative as that can be
and inspiring and like really cool to like mine for ideas for paint projects or whatever. Exactly. Like you're saying, I almost wish sometimes that when I picked up one of these things, I wasn't such a nerd that I knew his whole life story before I looked at him, you know, cause it'd be a lot more freeing to just be like, fuck it. You're going to be purple.
That's Star Trek with me, man. That's the wars for me every time I want to do a custom thing or a paint. Like, oh, this is going to be a Black Sun pre-Galactic War era skiff, you know, or whatever the fuck the name of it is.
Yep.
Like, going to that shit. But
and then you're in a box.
Then
I'm doing the Virago. This is going to be dope.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it was fucking weird. It's something where I think it's kind of like weathering for mecha scale models that people always ask like how.
Right.
And there's always videos on it, and like all the videos are like it'll literally be verbatim like here's how I'm doing it step by step.
Right.
Or it's like a rant with someone just talking about weathering or something. But there's enough information to where like theoretically anyone could do it, but it's when you actually apply it and you have that oh fuck moment that everything changes and it starts to not suck anymore.
No, absolutely.
The epiphany is your brain coding it into something that you can remember and apply in the future. Yeah.
Mostly
well, it's stuck delicious in my head candy now. Shell.
It's the delicious candy shell of a memory.
Melts in your brain, not in your
mouth. It melts right up in your brain. That's
the best place for it to melt.
Ugh.
It's, you're never getting that out of there.
What was the last epiphany you've had? Anyone?
Mine was about scribing. I was scribing some gunpla. Bailey told me, hey, you should glue those templates to your models. And what? Like, you know, if
oh,
you
yeah,
glue
no, I remember this.
You
yeah.
glue the metal template onto the model and then with it doesn't what? Move whenever you're trying to scribe with CA glue. So no, you sure. super glue the no, template just... onto the model. Yeah.
Okay.
And
that
then,
makes sense.
Yeah, it doesn't shift at all. 0% movement. You just scribe the piece, pull the template off, sand it down on the plastic, mm-hmm. and then you can burn the CA off the metal template with a lighter. Now, minor downside, the cyanide gas that is produced.
You have now grown a third arm, but
well, it's useful. I can use it for work holding.
But sweet, mine just
got to do that.
In,
yeah, well,
it's yeah. vestigial.
Bro, you gotta lift with that thing. You gotta like, you gotta really work that you know work that thing out.
It's like the brother I never wanted. You know, just kind of.
Hanging out.
It's anyway, just, hey, like, hey, how's it going?
He's on the couch. Yeah. Well, we'll get a fucking job. I don't know what to do with it.
Phil.
Yeah.
When's the last time you had epiphany? Modeling or anything in the range?
You know, I was a young woman then.
yes.
I don't know. Honestly, probably when, because like I've always been a hand painter, so I was kind of a late bloomer with messing around like airbrushing and stuff. So the last actual like whoa moment that I had, I'm sorry, it's not a hand painting moment, but it was like when I finally figured out how pre-shading works, because I'd always thought that was like the coolest oh, yeah. thing I'd ever seen. Because you can do that with really intense layering and glazing and subtle gradients or whatever with a hand paint, but with an airbrush, it just looks different. It's a different thing.
Yeah,
and
it really is. Yeah,
yeah. When I learned how to pre-shade after I first started messing with Gunpla, I was just like, "This is so cool!" And you know, now it's like,
yeah,
whatever. But
it's such a different look from like the miniature look, though. For example, if you paint a Space Marine, most likely you are going to highlight the edges right. of the armor plates, totally. And on Gunpla, you're going to shade the edges of the armor plates. What yep. is going on?
And like, I do both because I've been mini painting so long that I can't not edge highlight. So
yeah.
like
oh, yeah.
I'll pre-shade the edges and then I'll go back and like either like edge highlight or tip them or what it's whatever. But
mm-hmm. Gives you anyway. Such a good look though.
I'm not trying yep. to get too far away from topic there, but yeah, that's I'm working on developing new mini painting techniques that I'm very excited to try out. But yeah, the last time I really got surprised by something I did was that, I think.
But I think that's right on topic because, that was another epiphany that I had, realizing that if I paint a vehicle for Warhammer, despite the fact that the vehicle may be maybe like the same size as a Gundam model, I'm like using totally different techniques.
Oh yeah.
Even if I airbrush both, it's really weird. That is a weird feeling.
No, it's crazy too, because you know, like I'll hear people like complain about like how small like an HG kit is or whatever, and I'm just sitting here looking at this like this is massive, you know.
It blows my mind. It blows my mind. You're like, yeah, high grades are small. I'm like, what fucking universe, dog?
High grades are like, giant. Its eye is small. The rest of it's pretty big.
That's 1 inch of miniature. You know, you paint 28 millimeter miniatures your entire life, and all of a sudden you see something that's 6 inches tall. That's massive. Totally.
I mean, I've been painting, like I did that like old guy thing where you start painting like smaller minis because you're tired of paying for the big ones. So like I've been painting like 15s and 10s and 6 millimeter models for years and years and years. And
I'm not there yet, but I feel like it's going to hit. I have been painting the 1/144th pilots, though. I did hit the pilot painting phase.
Nice.
For Gunpla. Yeah.
I haven't gotten there yet just because I haven't fucking built anything that has a pilot with it yet. Yeah, but,
I've just got the.
I'm excited.
I've got a few, but that's it.
That's like, oh my God, you look in the Facebook groups and shit, everyone is like, oh my God, how do you paint these? And they're so small. I'm just like, I don't know, man. Like, they're not that bad. It's not hard to sell it. You got to paint tabletop quality. No one's looking at the pilot, you know, with the fucking magnifying glass.
Exactly. It's so small that you don't need much detail. Honestly, you can fake a lot of your detail. And in a lot of miniature painting, faking detail is the name of the game.
Well, yeah, that's your job. But that's the funny thing. That's one of the biggest contrasts I've seen between mini painting and Gunpla is that in the mini painting, you're expected to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's just, you're not done until you've done that, you know? And I have a lot of conversations with people and I get, it's just different painting styles. Everybody does everything differently. There's no right or wrong way to do stuff. I'm a big believer in that, but it's wild how different the standards are.
Mm-hmm.
like just like broadly culturally speaking.
Oh yeah.
Where like, you know, you can paint a Gundam one color and put a top coat on it and it's a style.
Yeah, it's a style. Like, well,
if you pulled that with a mini and put it on a shelf, like,
I mean, that's called, I had like, to enter a tournament and it was a three color minimum.
Yeah. That's the thing. To get into a tournament, you have to do more to a miniature than one of the currently gigantic Gunpla styles allow.
Well, wild. I think that there is, I think this is a pretty important topic that is something that we're probably going to cover on the cutting mat fairly soon. And it is, I think everything's like just all, it's all connected, man. Everything is just like, it's the circle of hobby. And yeah, well, it's, you know, don't go over there. It's like the elephant graveyard, and that's where, you know, War Machine ended up. So like, I don't know.
Too soon. It started so beautifully.
I know. It was such a good idea.
Those guys used to send me parts to build scenery. It was so nice.
But see, they made a series of mistakes that could also probably be an episode of a miniature podcast.
Rise and Fall.
Just don't try to compete with Warhammer. Stop doing that. That was a tangent. I was saying that the trick with painting a Gunpla one color and making it into a style is that it's still got to look good.
It does. And I really need to check myself when I say stuff like that, because there are guys that do that destroy it. I can't make something that smooth, you know?
I mean, I knew what you were saying. Like I know exactly what you mean, because
it's frustrating, the single color style, but also respectable.
Oh dude, it looks so like it, when that style is done properly, it looks so damn good.
Right.
And it's super hard to make. Like,
oh yeah,
I'm not a fan of Blood Angel's color scheme because it's so monochrome.
Right.
But I think I could do, you know, if we're talking about Blood Angels, it's all red. Mm-hmm. I can make a Char suit look pretty good. And that's you know.
But I think with that is a lot of people doing like monochrome or like single color paint jobs, they painted stuff that's been eight colors and they have done, you know, some extent of a hardcore paint job.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's where the bar is set out of the box is like Games Workshop says here's a painting guide, right? Here's how to fucking get started, because they kind of spoil, or they Bandai spoils us with color injection plastic.
Right.
Games Workshop, it's fucking gray, dog. You have to paint it.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, Gunpla wouldn't exist if it wasn't for the injected color plastic.
No,
it would
totally
have fallen off. That's like every other hobby.
Yep.
Unfortunately, the bar is set so fucking low for mediocrity with that kind of shit that it's like if you panel line, like put a gray line in a recess, it's kind of doing it for you. It's not hard.
Right.
Because the recess is already there.
Right. You're like, hey, GBWC, here I come, you know, fucking Golden Demon, here I come, you know.
Golden Demon. It's two different worlds.
It's true. That was really frustrating to me when I first started building Gunpla, and it's still frustrating to me for reasons I've outlined. But again, it's important for me to temper that with the guys that, you know, do what appears to be to a mini painter of minimal amount of effort is actually very intensive and like precise and deliberate. But either way, it is weird when you know, you sit there and spend like 13 hours layering a, you know, area of armor the size of your thumbnail.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, somebody like
that's a big area of lacquer too.
And they're like, Dunsky, you know, so
done. I'm out. I'm entering the contest. See you guys later.
7, I got first place likes. Bitches.
Yep. 7,000 likes.
Ooh, you did it. Wow, that's amazing.
And
yeah, heard, blow. I'm well, that actually just comes with the territory. That's a Warhammer necessity.
Totally.
Yeah, that mediocrity, I totally agree. That's a
that'll be a whole ass episode.
It's dangerous too, because you don't want to disparage anybody. Like, honestly, I'm stoked if somebody tries something, because especially with kits like Bandai makes, like, there's no real need to do anything to them. They actually look kind of okay right out of the box. So, like,
I mean, a lot of them look fantastic out of the box. Yeah. That's the challenge, right? You're always
tempted. Can I improve on this?
Yeah. Like, that's it. Like, once Once you build
especially
a good kit.
Especially with like real grades and shit too.
Yeah, I mean, totally. They're getting wild.
Built-in color separation. But I think it does break down into two different hobbies.
Yeah, it does. And that's where it happens really, like at the painting phase. Because there are a lot of similarities up to that point, especially now that, like, when I was a kid, all the good models were made out of pewter. Like, converting pewter models was a thing. It was, especially if you did stuff like, I always played orcs when I was a kid, so all my models were, like, you know, little chunks of lead. Oh, and, like, cutting those things up was not easy. Like,
biceps were so big around that you kind of had to like rock your knife back and forth to get a clean cut on those things.
And I'd get out like a coping saw and try to rock them down. It was not fun, but it was a thing. But now that like everybody makes insane plastics, it's like, it's a completely different world, and you can really like kit bash the hell out of a mini just like you could a bigger kit.
In a lot of ways, fun, I really. Oh, absolutely. Orcs are all about kit bashing. You get a vehicle from a different army and you
love them.
You orcify it.
They used to not have their own vehicles. You had to just, you had to take somebody else's stuff. You had looters. Oh my God. I could talk about that for days. You got to be careful with that.
You paint them red, get the extra movement. Like there's so much.
You
like,
got
so
extra movement points for painting it red.
Yeah. That had to be a Char reference, right? It, obviously.
Red ones go faster, man.
They do. The red ones do go faster. I prefer pewter miniatures to this day. I still prefer pewter over almost every plastic on the market. And it's because the casts are generally cleaner. Yeah, it's a cleaner cast once it's cleaned up. Once you paint it, I like the heft of the pewter miniature. Like, it just feels good in my hand. Yes, it's harder to convert. You know, it's harder to chop off limbs and stuff. But I'm kind of impressed by a couple of companies that do really good pewters, like Reaper pewters.
Yeah,
are just really freaking good.
They're amazing. They've always had the nicest kind of like one off. Casts of any like other major company that I know of, their stuff is so nice.
Yeah, I'm just a huge fan of those. I've had the opposite problem with some recent like non-pewter alternatives. Companies are going to these kind of floppy resins instead of pewter because
floppy.
Yeah, they're flaccid. These flaccid resins.
Yeah, a lot of them are using like plastic resin hybrids, like Restix, basically. Those, especially for like. Any like long thin parts, like you know, like weaponry, like spears, anything with like a haft on it. Even guns sometimes get kind of. So
I bought a unit of Howling Banshees when Games Workshop was doing fine cast.
So all
of their swords were fine cast, which means
they did units in that stuff.
Oh, it was all they did whole units in fine cast.
Fuck.
You pull it out of the box and the swords are like tied up in knots. You're like, what the
Jesus
fuck?
Christ.
Oh, it was awful.
Now that stuff is garbage. I've got one so fine cast model that I do not regret buying. And even that needs some work, but
it's so many bubbles.
That Black Library Eisenhorn is really, really nice.
Oh yeah.
I unfortunately did not know what fine cast was when I inherited my collection, so I
just put it away. Put it away.
Oh, I've got Necron dudes. I got
the Necrons are the worst. I got
they're so thin. Their arms are so thin.
The models looked so cool. There was like some Tomb Lord dude that I got when I was kit bashing an Admech army because that didn't exist, and that was a project I took on.
Yep.
Because that's what you do when you're an old nerd. But you're either making a Horus Heresy army or you're making something that doesn't exist yet that they're going to release while you're in the middle of it. And
I made Astral Claws and then Forge World got to them. Yeah,
attaboy.
Pre-Forge
World. I got this Tomb Lord Necron dude that was seriously like, oh my God, that was such a mess. Don't. Not with the fine cast. Don't do it. Don't do it.
Just say no to fine cast.
It's terrible. No to fine cast.
Yep. You're seriously. It's but that what's really interesting is that the industry did that and then they learned from it. So you don't really see it that much anymore. It's kind of nice.
Not too much. It still pops up a few times, like when Mantic was kind of going through its growing pains and trying to get bigger units put out. They did like a bunch of like orc boar riders that they did in the Restic, and that didn't go
interesting.
Great. The models were all right because they were bulky, but their spears were like pointed interesting directions. So
Mm-hmm. I feel you can tell when these companies to kind of go back to epiphany shit. You can kind of tell when they think they have an epiphany.
Oh yeah,
hey, I feel like contrast paint cheaper. Was like.
Yeah,
them fucking solving world hunger or some shit.
Contrast, yeah. We've done it. Somebody like some scientist burst out of the Games Workshop paint lab and just ran right up to the CEO's office and said, sir, I've cracked the code, sir.
I love that they were so proud of themselves that they made like, you know, yeah. videos of all the people yeah. involved in like really nice HD clips. They just went to like was... this like chubby dude in the basement of the building. Like, yeah, I'm the head paint formulator. Is really yeah. the right. finest thing we've ever come up with. Really,
I was but just like honestly, I cannot blame them for that because they. I mean, okay, full disclosure, I've never used a contrast paint in my life, but I've watched Joel use one. And
ironically life-changing. Use them a lot.
It's fine. If you like them, you like them. It's just a rebranding of an old technique. It's all it is, yeah. you know, and honestly, if they work well for you, having that stuff pre-formulated instead of having to mix it on the fly is a huge advantage. So yeah, I'm not disparaging the method. I'm disparaging the marketing of it. I don't like the way it's presented as, you know, this is it, the easy mode painting. I'm like, no, dude.
Well, see, did it the right way. Ammo took that formula and they said, hey, we have a shader line. It's just going to help you paint skins a little bit faster.
Right.
And you can paint tanks and flat surfaces with it because it's a little bit of a different formula. And you're like, oh, shit, that's cool. Yeah. And you're not shoving it in my face saying this is the end all be all fucking paint. But it was also funny, too, because like, they had this, you know, quote unquote huge epiphany about it, and then the community had epiphany about it, like, okay, just fucking flow aid and paint, bud.
Right.
Only these five colors are worth a fuck to buy.
I mean, some people were really good at glazing before this. You know?
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like that was definitely like one of my favorite techniques to employ. Me too. I still use it constantly. It's like a big aid in my layering, actually. But glaze painting over white is a technique that's been around almost as long as I have. And it's a really effective way to get very soft, subtle gradients if you have the patience to only use that and do it properly as opposed to slosh it all over the model and call it cool.
You got to do it consistently. So. And back in the early 2000s, there was a huge fad of people dipping their models in deck stain.
Oh yeah, isn't that how?
And then the army painter came out.
The army painter came out with quick shade, which was
put their name on it. It was deck stain for $30 a jar.
This is deck stain.
Does anybody know what this is?
It's deck stain.
Oh man,
it was just fucking deck stain. Like they didn't even change the packaging.
No,
yeah, it was sold in a Minwax can too.
Yeah, straight up,
like a screwdriver pop top. Can of Minwax, but it just shows you how far we've come, because honestly the Games Workshop stuff works really well. It is formulated correctly. If you don't know how to make a glaze, it's canned glaze. Yeah, like it's freaking
great.
Even
sell the medium too, which is dope.
Yeah, it's awesome. Like, and I think honestly, that's a fantastic idea.
Their medium is special too. Like, I don't know what it is. I hate paying GW prices for something I technically already own in bulk quantities, but I don't know what it is about Lamian. I've never found another glaze medium that's actually transparent.
Yeah.
They all are at least a little cloudy, and the paint is still going to dry clear. It's going to look nice.
Oh, yeah.
Everything's going to be good. But when you mix it, it's going to look funky unless you know what it's supposed to look like. So it's like,
imagine the asshole that made Nolan Oil and just how stupid he is for not saying, I want an X amount royalty on each pot sold.
Yeah, that stuff is
I've tried making my own. I've made my own washes and shit, but like, I don't know what it is, but I just love Nolan Oil.
There's some wax component to it. I don't know.
That's
what I
thought.
I don't like using them that much anymore, honestly, because they have such a specific look to the way that they dry.
I had a problem with Nolan Oil. That so you mix Nolan Oil with water and you end up with like little white patches
on your
model, and I think that's probably the wax component, but I found a product that doesn't have that problem, and it's Army Painter Dark Tone.
Okay,
it works as well as normal oil.
Okay.
But it's dilutable with water. So
shit.
Little things you pick up along the way that I found are very useful.
You can Citadel washes with Lamian medium, and they don't break like that.
Interesting.
Or any acrylic medium, really. It's just and most of them you can thin.
Is magic.
Most of them you can thin with water. Yep. But the black does get a little weird when you thin it down.
It's real wonky.
Yeah. A lot of I've seen this too with actually, wow, what was his name? He's a UK builder, does Warhammer and stuff too. Part of the Treehouse model people.
I feel like you could be making this all up and I would not
hold on. It's gonna piss me off so I find his name, but he did the video on pretty much making your own Nolan oil.
Oh, nice.
It was a black wash. You call it a magic wash or whatever.
Oh, okay. I've heard of the magic wash, yeah.
And it was one of these things where like you can kind of tell like he had epiphany about it. He wanted to share it to the people. I'm like, hey, look at this fucking thing that I made.
I love that impulse too. Like not just that you had it, but then you're like, okay, guys. You know, like that's the impulse.
Like showing everyone.
Tell everyone.
Yeah. Like that I want everybody to do that all the time. Like that's what I want to see.
Kind of like
people
my layering epiphany to the public of saying, like, hey, like, I don't know. I feel like there's a big release of just not stress, but just model making guru. Sorry, I found his channel.
Okay.
Really good guy. It's different to yourself when you're like, oh yeah, fuck yeah, I figured that out. Cool. I know how dry brushing works. But when you tell someone else that knows, like I told Brandon about it, like it was a really good, weird feeling.
Yeah.
I think people should do that. Same thing like talking about failures. Talk about your fucking, you know, your progress.
Accomplishments and progress are important to be happy about. You know, like it's
welcome to your progress.
We're just doing nerd bullshit or whatever, but I mean it feels nice to figure out how to do something that you previously could not grasp how to do. Mm-hmm. And especially with mini painting, like the guys and gals that are so good at it are the people whose stuff you see all the time, whether it's in product shots or, you know, if you are the guy that follows competitive mini painting, I can't quite bring myself to give a shit, but you know, like
I'm glad I'm not alone
there. But if I see those, you know, winning entries or whatever, I'm just like, okay, seriously, how the did you do that? You know, like
specular lighting, you know, perfect reflections.
Yeah.
It's all of it. Every little piece of competition entries are nuts.
And it's exactly the same way that I used to feel. Like you got to remember too, that like modern mini companies, especially GW with its, you know, overhaul of its public image in the last several years, made the entry point to what was expected of you as a painter much more accessible and, you know, beyond dumb with their marketing of the contrast. But even before that, when like Duncan was doing all the tutorial videos and everything, and Emma and Peachy and all those guys were all doing that, it really didn't lower any bars. It just made it so that somebody that understood how to actually apply those techniques was showing people how to do stuff, which is something that was never ever accessible to me when I was learning. There was no broadband. There was, I mean, we barely had dial up in my like Iowa farmhouse where I was learning how to paint. Like that stuff didn't exist. All I had was product photos of the heavy metal team and like Mike McVay's new diorama. And I'm just like, I literally have no idea how you used a paintbrush and made that happen.
I see the final product, but I don't understand the steps from A to B to C.
So even if you're not the type that, like, you know, hero worships or whatever, you end up, you know, this is like this ideal image. I know they're using the exact same stuff I'm using to do this. Why am I not doing that? And when you do figure that out, when you do actually like accomplish something approaching that, you're just, of course it feels great, you know, like it's awesome. You're learning and figuring stuff out, and you've got something to show for it, which you don't always have for accomplishments, which is pretty fucking cool.
Mm-hmm. But see, what I was saying, what I was saying before was that when you accomplish that, and then you tell somebody who also knows how to do that, you find yourself on the inner circle of an exclusive group of people who know how to do something which is difficult, and difficult things are not done by many people. If something's hard, not many people are going to do it.
Well, and not, I mean, there's the whole, I guess the whole like inner circle thing never really appealed to me. What I like about it is that you figured it out. You remember mm-hmm. how hard it was for you to figure it out. Now you can help other people figure it out. You know, like it's like I was saying, like the first part of the epiphany is I figured it out. And the second part is right. Guys, you know,
guys, check this out. Yeah.
Here's how you do it. So
I feel
it's hard. That's so hard to just teach the stuff. Also, it's a totally, you know, you know how to do it. Like I could have shown Joel how to do layering and I probably wouldn't have been good at teaching it, you know, strangely enough.
I watched so many videos. I was going to say, I've seen so much stuff to go back to what we were talking about on teaching it is not everyone's a teacher.
It's true. I'm not trying to say you're like blowing it if you're not teaching it immediately or whatever. I'm just saying.
But the other thing too is I think just showing someone, it doesn't have to be online, because like that's the other thing too is like people think reaching a follower count or a number count on social media analytics is an epiphany of like, oh my god, I did the thing. Really didn't do the thing.
Not give less of a shit.
Yeah, you didn't do anything. Yep. You know, it was just the internet. But like when you paint something physical and you have that physical touch of that oh fuck moment,
yeah
dude, it's so much different than anything else you can fucking do.
I'm like that. I think that's where the impulse to teach comes from. Like, I don't know if I'm a good teacher. Like, I hope I am, because I definitely try it a lot. But it's like it made me so happy to see that thing happen that I want to see it happen everywhere.
Oh
you
yeah,
know? It's like this is just do it. Like, I want to see this on stuff. You know, so it's
I think that's where the impulse comes from. Yeah, you want other people to feel the same joy that you felt that whenever you discovered this technique. I totally understand that, yeah.
There's so much frustration that comes with learning anything new. That there just is. Like, it takes time to learn any new skill. And the relief and joy that comes from, you know, hitting a milestone or whatever, you know, it's a real thing, you know, and it feels great. Why not want everybody to do that, you know? Just try and get the message out that, you know, it's hard, but look how cool, you know?
Yeah.
Look what this looks like. This looks fantastic. Let's make every army look fantastic. Totally. Because ultimately, when you're playing a miniature game, you want your opponent's army and your army to look as epic as possible.
Oh, yeah. That's part of the whole cinematic scope of it.
That's what it is. Yeah. Miniature games are cinematic. You play it because you want to visually tell a story on a board, and you want the scenes from that story to look freaking awesome.
Totally. That's what it's all about. Otherwise, you might as well just play D&D or whatever.
When I go to like Hangar 18 and back when the world wasn't ending, and I could see people playing.
I don't remember.
And
that.
They would have unpainted stuff, and I'd be like, "Oh, that sucks."
Minis
man.
Are like blue tacked together or whatever.
Yeah, but like I would watch a game with like Joe or like whoever else he was playing, and they have like these big epic like buildings and dioramas, and there's like blocking on it, and there's like every mini was like 5 hours to fucking paint, and like it was like, this is fucking awesome. I love taking photos of that shit.
Right.
So like, yeah, I mean, I don't know, fucking paint your minis.
Please paint your minis.
It's tough with the way that it's marketed though too. I mean, like it's when I first started playing 40K back in the Rogue Trader days, you could play a game with like 10 dudes on a side. Like that was a weird game anyway. Like that's a whole other thing. But the point is that, you know, you bought your dudes, you painted them, and then you had fun making them do interesting things. And then, you know, second edition came around and they were like, now armies are huge. And it was still it was kind of doable. But I mean, I played orcs, dude. You had like literally hundreds of foot troopers because there were no vehicles. And even if there were, you couldn't afford them. So it was just like, here's my 10,000 dudes, you know.
And that's only half the army, you know.
Yeah, I mean, no human can be expected to paint those nicely, and few humans can be expected to just paint them. So,
well, you know, one thing that we mentioned,
that's as much a casualty of mass battle as anything.
It is. Oh, it absolutely is. It's a totally different type of game too. And we talked about this last episode briefly, the difference between these mass battle games and a skirmish game.
Yep.
We're starting to see a resurgence of skirmish games across the board.
That's fantastic.
Look at Kill Team, look at Necromunda, look at, I can't say Mordheim, because technically
because Mordheim dead. Doesn't actually exist anymore.
It doesn't, but also it does. In you know, it still exists in our hearts and also on the internet. But
when they brought when they brought Necromunda back, I got really excited. I used to love playing Necromunda. I mean, the trade off that you get, at least in like mass, like big market games, if you go from like mass battle game to skirmish game, you wind up with, at least in terms of like model count, you get less stuff to do, which is great because you can spend more time, you know, lavishing attention on these individual models and making them really characterful. The downside to it is that most of those rule sets are pretty fucking crunchy, and
they
take just as much time to play as a big ass, you know, mass battle game. I'm like, guys, we gotta pull it back. But either way, as far as just painting goes, I love the idea of like these 10 guys really are all you ever need. Mm-hmm. You know, like just have fun with them, make them look nice.
I only ever painted squads anyway. You know, I would sit down and paint a squad, and then maybe I wouldn't paint something for months. Like really? A squad of 10, that's about, I run out of steam after I paint 10 because it takes me so long to paint a squad of 10 because of the amount of time and effort that I put into that squad.
I still have the same problem where I'll sit down with a production line and I'll probably get through a couple of like, you know, I'll get through like base coats and like blocking out colors and then I'll just kind of just stay on this guy for a while now. I end up with like 8 half finished dudes and one really nice one and one that's almost there. Like that's where it goes.
Because it's fun. Like it's fun to do those advanced techniques on one dude.
It is.
But the production line was an epiphany that I had when I realized, hey, wait a minute. I can base coat all these guys one day and then wait for them to dry and then, you know, put their base coats on the next day, then do one highlight the next day. Like just breaking all that stuff up means after 2 weeks, you got 20 finished dudes.
No, it's true. And that if that's the reason you're painting them is to have lots of game pieces, that's the only way you're ever going to accomplish it in a reasonable amount of time. Yeah.
And when I transitioned from playing these miniature games, I don't really even play mini games anymore because I realized that I did it for the painting.
Yeah. I was always in it for making stuff look neat.
See, there you go. Yeah. And when I transitioned from playing to entering contests, I did not do that on purpose. The first entries that I put in contests were just things that I painted for games.
There was never intention there.
Yep. It just worked out really well. You do it because you like it.
That was how I got into SDs. I was just like, these are small enough. I could probably put these on a game board if I tried hard enough. And then I was like, I actually really like painting these.
Yeah.
Surprise, it's fun. It's fun.
It's my thing I actually enjoy. Have fun with your PGs. I'm gonna spend $5 on mine and it's gonna look nicer.
That shit blows my mind. But this has been a quick little episode.
That had nothing to do with the topic you intended.
The topic was epiphanies, not so much more layering.
Okay.
So this is something we're going to try and do more. We're going to have some guests on the show. I think it's great because I know pretty much jack shit of the mini world and Brandon knows just about everything there is to know. So we have really good opinions on a lot of this shit, but, Phil, man, thank you so much for hopping on, bud.
I'm so stoked you asked me. Obviously you want to have, you know, lots of people or whatever, but I would love to do this anytime you guys want me around. I will talk about this stuff at like a nauseating length. So,
well, I think your insight is really important here. So we'd love to have you on again sometime.
Yeah.
And, I think this is great.
A permanent member of this. Yeah.
Ooh.
I don't know why I did that accent.
I don't know. Why did you do that accent?
That was out of nowhere.
Sometimes you just gotta be like the creepy guy on the Monty Python bridge. You know, that's just how it goes.
Yeah.
That's how you ask an old friend to come hang out with you is just busting into that. So that's good.
Pip, pip.
But no, I'd love to anytime, guys.
Yeah, and, for sure.
I think I've mentioned it to both of you already. Like anytime, like when I'm trying to get this stream up and running, I just got to build a new machine. But as soon as I do, I'd love to have both of you on anytime.
Oh yeah. I was going to say, plug that real quick before we hop off here. Well, I'm excited for it.
Me and my buddy, Carl Goalie Zero, are working on a new Twitch stream called Right Brain Models. I see a whole lot of, how do I do this short? Look, it's mostly going to be a teaching stream. It's mostly just focused on the more creative aspects of just having a good time with all kinds of hobbies. Mm-hmm. It's not just Gunpla focus. We do a lot of Gunpla. It's not just mini focus. We do a lot of minis. Like it's whatever. I'm a big like diorama and scenery guy, so I like making that stuff. So the big thing with it is that the main reason we started working on it together was that we'd seen all these like tutorial videos everywhere that would teach people like a specific way to do things, right? Like this is how you do it.
Right.
And I find that because I'm on like the help team of the GBA Discord and was on the Team Awful Discord, a bunch of other places where I just like helping people. Mm-hmm. The most common questions that got asked to me and the most significant stumbling blocks for people as they learned was that they were having a really hard time breaking out of what they'd already been told in a 5-minute tutorial video. You know, it's like they didn't understand why they were doing what they were doing, just how to do it the one way. So what I'm hoping to do with the stream is to teach people the theory behind what they're doing, hoping that opens them up and lets them try some new stuff. So
that's a great idea. I mean, basically before you understand the why of what you're doing, you can never develop a better technique because you always do it the same way without knowing why you're doing it. We see the same thing in science. You have to understand a mechanism before you can improve.
Absolutely.
And I this is something that we always emphasize on the Cutting Mat podcast a lot. And this is, when you teach someone how to do something, always emphasize, this is the way I do it. This works for me.
Right.
You know, just so that they know there is no, like gospel truth in, hobby and in hobby, technique.
You know? It's just art. Like art. It's just how you get there.
That's right.
Yeah, it's just objective. Like art. So,
Oh, it literally is. Yeah, yep. Absolutely. Yeah. It's art. Yeah.
Some. And the more epiphanies you have, the closer you get to feeling that way. So
yeah, and you know, once you get 10,000 epiphanies and you punch your card, you get a free epiphany for free. It's nice.
And a Frogurt.
I have so many to go.
Well, they didn't give me a Frogurt.
You can.
I want free Frogurt.
There's Frogurt at the end of the epiphany chain. That's how
right brain flavored Frogurt. Delicious prions. It's good for you. Pennies. Wonderful.
Finally, my prion disease. It's going to be amazing.
All right, everyone. This has been the Premonition of Paint. Hope you guys like it. If you enjoy it, you know, share it with your friends. Fucking listen to it while you're painting some minis. Give us a review on the Cutting Mat. That definitely fucking helps out a lot.
Cutting Mat rules.
If you want to hear more about kind of more Gunpla side of things or just more hobby nonsense with more of us talking all at once, go check out the other episodes.
They're so good at it, though.
All right, we'll see you guys.
Yep.
Thanks again, fellas.
Peace out.